This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code SWORD11.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Sword and Laser, episode number 150. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And this is my full-time job now.
Congratulations. Welcome to Sword and Laser. We're glad to have you.
Yes. So this is the Sword and Laser podcast where we talk about the latest in science fiction and fantasy, discuss what you guys are talking about over on Goodreads.com, and of course, run through our book pick of the month. And of course, this month we are reading Ancillary Justice by Anne Leckie.
If anyone doesn't understand why Veronica said that, she announced today she's leaving one of her other shows. Thankfully, not leaving this one.
No.
Thanks for staying.
We've got too much work ahead of us.
Yes, we do. We got so many irons and fires and
broadswords. I made that joke in my blog post.
I saw that. That was good.
Did
that was
you like
clever.
That?
Yeah, and you can link to the Kickstarter too. Nicely done.
Thank you very much. Yeah, speaking of Kickstarter, we'll give you a quick update. We have passed the $40,000 mark, which is fantastic.
Yes.
We're still trying to get to $50,000 for our second stretch goal, or is it third?
It's our second stretch goal. It's the third goal. I always
third
mix
goal.
Those up. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So it's our second stretch goal, which will allow us to have a live studio audience for our taping. So if that's something you'd be interested in, keep donating. Up your goals.
I put a little update too, saying like if we get to 50,000, our next stretch goal would be to try to make Lem talk.
Yeah. I got a note from Scalzi today actually saying make sure I don't spend all of my Kickstarter money on blow. And I said,
What's that mean, Veronica? And I said,
John Scalzi, I'm sorry. I already am $40,000 in the hole.
On blow.
On hookers and blow.
Well, that happens.
So,
you know, when the Kickstarter money starts to rain down. Thing is, Veronica, Kickstarter isn't over yet. We still have 11 days to go. So you shouldn't be spending that money yet.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty satisfied that I can at least get $20,000 worth of blow. I feel like that's
we also
a safe
have
bet.
To pay for the steins and the posters and the books and
I know and everything. All the other stuff we have in our brains for awesome
really,
ideas for our
at
next
the end,
rewards.
I have like $5 left
for blow. That's it.
I'm afraid so.
Oh well, that's not very much.
No, it's not.
At least that's what Scalzi tells me. But anyway, so
dealer, what's going on there?
It was just a funny random aside today. But we usually kick off the show with the What Are We Drinking segment, but it is only noon here on the West Coast when we are recording this episode. So I'm just drinking coffee and water. I don't know about you, Tom.
I finished some coffee. I'm on to water now. Mixing my drinks. Uh-oh.
Trouble.
Yeah.
So nothing too interesting today, guys. Sorry. So
sorry,
y'all. Let's move on to the official first segment of the show, the Quick Burns.
Yeah, Goodreads is having their best books of 2013. Now, they launched it since the last time we did an audio podcast, so we missed the kickoff round, but they're into the semifinal round today. So you can't just nominate anything. You have to select from the top nominees from the first round. Mm-hmm. There's some good stuff in here, and they have it broken out. Science fiction is a category, fantasy is a category, and then paranormal fantasy is its own category. So when you look at the fantasy, you're not going to see Charlaine Harris or any of that kind of stuff. That's all off on its own. And wow, there's some awesome stuff in here. Sci-fi wise, I'll go over the sci-fi, you go over the fantasy. That makes sense, right?
Okay, I mean, you know, I'm actually surprised, first of all, that Cold Days by Jim Butcher is in the paranormal fantasy. I guess that makes sense.
Oh, I didn't notice that. You're right, huh?
But a lot of the other ones are a little more in the romance-y vein.
Yeah. Yeah, he's urban fantasy. Yeah. He's paranormal fantasy. Okay. The novel I've been reading all year, Great North Road, is in there. Others you might recognize, James S.A. Corey's Abaddon's Gate, The Human Division, John Scalzi, Best of All Possible Worlds, Karen Lord, Orson Scott Card's Earth of Fire, Dust, which we read, Hugh Howey as a pick, and Ancillary Justice, our current pick by Anne Leckie, is in there as well.
Yeah,
there's a bunch of others.
A lot of great stuff in the fantasy section. We have A Memory of Light by Robert Jordan and Brandon Sanderson. We have The Third Kingdom by Terry Goodkind. We have The Companions by R.A. Salvatore, which we just talked to him about recently on the show. Natural History of Dragons, which I've been meaning to read for a long time, by Marie Brennan. And Neil Gaiman, The Ocean at the End of the Lane. Gosh, there's a lot of great stuff. Mark Lawrence, Emperor of Thorns, another one I've been meaning to read. The Crown Tower by Michael J. Sullivan. There's so much good stuff in here. Republic of Thieves, of course, by Scott Lynch.
Yeah, which just came out. Also, that you will beef up your to-read list if you do this. But go do it. Go to goodreads.com. They've got the banners up all over the place, and we'll have the link in the show notes as well.
I feel like Tom and I kind of talked about this before the show, that maybe we need to be reading more, like, not new releases necessarily, but more recent hot reads.
Yeah, I think we need to space them out. I don't think we want to be the book club that's always the newest, latest stuff. Mm-hmm. Almost the newest, latest, best, which is Jeff Cannata's show. But yeah, we can make a concerted effort to kind of sprinkle some of these in.
The problem that most of our listeners have with that kind of idea is that then the books are very hot at the library,
mm-hmm.
and so they get on a waiting list or they're not available for interlibrary loan. So yeah, that there is some downside to that too. And also sometimes when they're released, they're not out on Audible yet.
And as I've said before, though, if we're going to pick the best books for the book club, we can't pay attention too closely to where they're available, as long as they're available somewhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it hasn't been written yet, we won't pick it.
You can't keep all of the people happy all of the
That's
time.
That's right. And we would never be doing the current picks with current, you know, the good stuff if we never go with new stuff because it might be too hot or whatever. So,
right.
We'll space it out. We'll make sure there's some good library picks in there. And sometimes the library picks like Alfred Bester are not available on Audible. And then you have to go to the library. You have to find an ebook of it.
So. Or Ancillary Justice, not available on Audible yet.
There you go.
Until December. In other news today, something that I think a lot of you will be excited about, you can actually read the original manuscripts from Mary Shelley's Frankenstein in your browser. They have it's cool too because it is literally the original manuscript. So you can, it's in her handwriting.
It's not it's not like transcoded or OCR'd or anything. Like you're reading her actual handwriting.
It's pretty amazing. It's over at the ShelleyGoodwinArchive.org, and this is from The Verge. And you click through, you can see about the Frankenstein notebooks. You can click on Draft Notebook A, and then it's like looking at a book. You can click through the different pages and actually read it in PDF format. And it's incredible. It's really cool to see. You can actually limit the view to Mary Shelley or Percy Shelley.
I thought that was really cool. Like you can see the poet's notes to his wife.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, this part's pretty good. He didn't write that, but. Now, if you're saying, well, wait a minute, I've looked at manuscripts before. Those are hard to read. They also do have you can see the view that shows you what is written on the page if you're having a hard time making it out.
Yes. So this, I cannot believe how much work must have gone into doing this. It's a page out of history, to be very literal. It is.
Yeah, really, really, literally is.
And it's an amazing piece of literature history, and I want to scroll through it and take a look later myself.
Well, you know, when I went to the British Museum for the first time, the reading room was the first place I went because they have these kinds of things out on display for you to look at. And you just get such a sense of awe when you see the actual handwriting mm-hmm. of these great authors, you know, James Joyce, like just what he scribbled down as he's writing Ulysses, for goodness sake. So this is pretty incredible. And this is what the promise of the World Wide Web is supposed to be. I guess that the depressing side of it is that current authors won't be able to give you this experience because they all work in, you know, at least typewriters, if not word processors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
for the most part.
Very cool. Check that out. We'll have a link in the show notes.
There's a group wants to start a science fiction museum in Washington, D.C. Yes, people of Seattle, we know you have a science fiction museum. But this is these are some folks who have experience with museums and curation. And they say, we believe Washington, D.C. is an ideal location for a museum dedicated to science fiction, based in part on the remarkable draw the district's museums have for people from all over the world. So they're trying to say, hey, let's get a little bit of that sci-fi history out in front of the vast number of people coming to D.C. to go to the Smithsonian other places like that.
It's almost like they're trying to legitimize it in some way by putting it in D.C. I mean, of course, I think it's legitimate, but I think it gives it maybe an extra sense of importance to have it in the nation's capital.
Well, and so many science fiction stories involve the destruction of Washington, D.C.
True.
So it's another obvious reason to have it there.
So yeah, it sounds like they're trying to raise $160,000 by December 11th, and that's going to go to fund like this pop-up version of the museum.
Kind of a preview, huh?
Right. And then they will go on to do like the legitimate fundraising for it. Yeah, but I mean, I'm really curious why they keep saying it's like the first of their kind, because that comes up in their mm-hmm. text a lot here. And because it's not, there is the one in Seattle.
Well, it depends on how you define kind. The first of its kind being in Washington, because there's not another one in Washington.
Okay. I guess that's valid, I suppose.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. First of its kind sometimes is just used as I know there's another one, but I'm sure there's something different about ours, so I'll just call it that and say, ha, yeah. I said of its kind.
Yeah.
So there.
All right. We have a lot of other award winners coming out today this week. Oh, yeah. We have the 2013 British Fantasy Awards. Not a lot of stuff I know here, which is cool.
SF Signal has the listing stuff there. And I think we've gone through this before. Like, you don't have to be British to win the award, you just have to have been released in Britain, I think, if I'm remembering right. For instance, Cabin in the Woods, Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard won Best Screenplay. That's the one I recognized here. Best Fantasy Novel was Some Kind of Fairy Tale by Graham Joyce.
Yeah, which Blanche. I'm not familiar with. Based on nothing except the cover art and the title, it really reminds me of the book we read about, Interlibrary Loans.
Joe Walton, among others. And yeah, it does have that feel.
On nothing except.
No, but it's a girl walking through the woods. Kind of, you get a lot of that in Among Others, so I could totally see that.
Yeah, these look fairies. Scary. All of these covers except the first one look scary. Look at them.
Yeah. They do have horror as one of their nominees, so I guess that tilts it a little bit that way.
Perhaps.
Remember Why You Fear Me.
Yeah, that's the one I just clicked on. Best collection. It looks terrifying.
Yeah, that picture of that person, I'm fearing you already. I don't even know why.
We also have the 2013 World Fantasy Awards. We had Lifetime Achievements, Susan Cooper and Tanith Lee. Novel, Aelith the Unseen by G. Willow Wilson, who we had on the show in the past.
Yeah, congratulations, Willow. That's great.
So that is pretty awesome. So that's another list of cool things that you might want to check out. They were announced this weekend at the World Fantasy Convention in Brighton, where we forgot to put this in the show notes. It was announced that I was one of the Patrick Rothfusses.
Oh, was that where it was?
That's it came out while Patrick was over there.
Which Patrick Rothfuss were you?
I was at Real Pat Rothfuss.
You were real? Oh, that was you?
That was me, the cartoon one with the hat. And yeah. Mary Robinette Cole was the winner. She convinced everyone that she was Pat.
She was the one that everyone thought was actually Pat. That's
she
so funny.
She beat Pat. And like by a long shot, like a huge margin. I think she had like 45% of the vote and he had like way less.
Which one was she?
She was, you're making me remember. I don't remember.
She was I don't remember. Yeah.
I don't remember which one, but Pat has it all up on his blog.
Yeah. You can go check it out there.
Yeah. And Kylo was one as well.
Nice. Well, Cory Doctorow has a reminder post up from last week on Boing Boing about the 21st Century Science Fiction Anthology that finally hit shelves. We've been mentioning it in the calendar. It collects stories from authors in the current century. And of course, Cory's one of them, with Chicken Little, his stories in there, but also Elizabeth Baer, Paolo Balciagalupi, Catherine Valente, Hanu Rajaniemi. A lot of those lesser touted sometimes authors, but really quality stuff. Tobias Buchel, Vandana Singh, and it's getting good reviews all over the place. Patrick Nielsen Hayden and David Hartwell are the editors, which means they kind of collected these together. So if you're looking for a good short story collection, that's definitely one to check out.
Absolutely. And then finally, from my drug pusher, John Scalzi, over on his whatever blog, we have the, he did an interesting...
Which, by the way, is the name of his blog. Some people are like, oh, she's being so dismissive.
It's called whatever.
It's called whatever.
It's whatever.scalzi.com. So don't be mad at me. He wrote about the Campbell to Hugo conversion rate, which is a pretty thoughtful post over here about how many winners of the Campbell Award for Best New Writer then go on to win the Hugo Award for Best Novel. He is one of those people. Also in that list, Jerry Purnell, C.J. Sherry.
Oh, no. Those are You're right.
I am right.
Since the first awarding of Campbell to Jerry Purnell, I knew Purnell wasn't on there. That's what threw me.
So okay. Four Campbell winners have also won Best Novel, Hugo. So C.J. Sherry, like I said, Orson Scott Card, Joe Walton, and John Scalzi.
We have read all of those authors as picks.
You're right. We have. That's a coincidence.
Look at that. That's why we don't read always necessarily the hottest new thing, because we're giving you the awesome stuff.
Yeah, totally. So this is a cool post because you can see all the people who have won short fiction Hugos, but then didn't win Best Novel. These are Campbell winners. All the different like category crossovers. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, if you're wondering about the Venn diagram of Campbell to Hugo, and even includes Nebula in there as well, check it out. It's a good post.
Absolutely. Well, we should take a moment to thank our sponsor. This podcast, as always, is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this show, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. And what were we picking?
I was thinking maybe people might be interested in get a free copy of Happy Hour in Hell, Bobby Dollar Volume 2.
Oh, yes, by Mr. Chad Williams.
We read the first of these books as a book club pick, and it's definitely on my list to get to because I want to find out what happens next. My list at the end of this year is just getting ridiculously long. Mm-hmm. But, that, Chad Williams, Happy Hour in Hell, or any Audible book at all. Red Seas Under Red Skies, for instance, is in there. And, we got all kinds of... Abaddon's Gate is in there. Republic of Thieves is in there. Mm-hmm. Go get a free audiobook. How do they do it, Veronica?
If you go to audiblepodcast.com/sword.
Tell them what they win.
That is audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's where you can get your free audiobook, any one of your choosing. And or if you've already done that and you're just happy with your Audible service and you love our show, tell Audible over on Twitter. They're audible_com. And that would be awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Just telling them like, hey, you guys, thanks for supporting Sword and Laser. It does help us out. They like to know that people are talking about them. That they're out there, getting the real stuff down.
What?
I don't know. I'm trying. You know what I'm trying to do?
What?
I'm totally trying to update the calendar because I realized I didn't delete the older dates before we started the show.
Oh, and that would have confused me.
Yeah.
I would have looked at the dates and forgotten.
You would have been like, wait a minute. It's November 12th. Why are we reading November 5th?
So, wait, what day is today? Today is the 12th. Okay, so we're starting at the 12th?
We're starting at the 12th, yes. Okay. I'm busily deleting the 5th and the 7th. Actually, moving them to past calendar.
Gotcha.
Maybe some people don't realize, but if you want to find out what has come out recently, we link from our calendar at swordandlaser.com/calendar to past calendar, where I archive everything. So it'll show you what's been out recently.
Nice. Very cool. So on November 12th, we have this show. And of course, Long Live the Queen, Book 3 of the Immortal Empire by Kate Locke. We have Kaleidoside, a Peacer novel, the Peacer series by Dave Swavely. We also have Fiddlehead by Sherry Priest. Apparition, the Hungry Ghost by Trish J. McGregor. Horse of a Different Color, Stories by Howard Waldrop.
And then on November 19th, The Severed Tower, a Conquered Earth novel by J. Barton Mitchell, Bloodstone, a Rebel Angel series novel by Gillian Philip, and Watcher of the Dark, the Jeremiah Hunt Chronicle book by Joseph Nassis. And then November 26th, 2013, Gene Wolfe fans, The Land Across is coming out.
Nice. Does it feel to you like things are slowing down a little bit?
Yeah, they do, because they want to get them all on the shelves by November so that when Black Friday comes and everybody's shopping for gifts, they've been out there, they've got their stacks out, they got their end caps. So it's funny, you don't see as much come out in December. What you do see come out is kind of sometimes rebel authors, or I don't know, like people who put their book out on the 25th sometimes just to be weird, be silly. And then if you scroll down to January 7th, you see it like just a floodgates coming back out.
Gotcha. All right. So moving on now, I see normally we would go into TV, movies, and video games, but I think we should move that down to near the barrier sword section and jump right into the book check-in. Good call.
You called an audible.com.
I did that. Yes. Yes. Well, Tom, now you have to explain what an audible is.
Well, in football,
in this context,
an audible is something where you change the play at the last moment by just shouting it out to your teammates, even though you've huddled and planned, right? Mm-hmm. So you call an audible and change it up. That's what Veronica just did. We had huddled before, and then she said, wait a minute, I'm going to run a 32 belly dive instead.
I would actually move that from 36 down to 42, Tom. So below the barrier sword,
that actually means something to me, ladies and gentlemen. There, how's that?
So they're actually below the audio swipe there, the swing of the barrier sword. That way, there's more things beyond that. Anyway,
good. Done.
Inside baseball, I'm mixing my sports metaphors
That's
now.
How the baseball sausage scores a touchdown.
Oh, I miss baseball and also eating sausage at baseball games. All of those things.
One of those things. You could watch some Winter League ball. Anyway, this is not
highlight reels. All right. Yeah. So we are reading Ancillary Justice by Anne Leckie, who we will be having on the show, by the way. So if you want to jump into.
Well done, Veronica,
Thank you.
Awesome job.
Thank you. It was very easy. I just emailed her.
Sometimes.
Very nice.
That's good.
And she knows we're reading the book for the club, and she's excited about it, too.
Oh, good.
And we have a thread over in our author question section of the forum. So if you want to drop some notes to Miss Leckie about like the story that we're currently reading, feel free to do so. We're collecting those for the end of the month for the wrap-up episode for Ancillary Justice.
Oh, we should mention Mike Cole will be interviewing as well, so there's another thread for him. Ancillary Justice is divisive, and what's really interesting to me is usually it's kind of a back and forth in one thread, but it was funny when I went looking at threads about who's discussing it, and we're not going to wrap it up yet, obviously, but I wanted to find some non-spoilery stuff. There's one that was started by Ruth called Sucked In by the Beginning, and it's essentially a bunch of people talking about how much they were sucked in by this book and they loved it. And then there's another one by Frederick called The World Versus First Impressions, talking about how hard it has been for Frederick to get into the book, and other people saying, yeah, it took me a while too. What do you think causes that kind of almost polar opposite reaction where they're not, it's not, we always get the like, I like this book, I don't like this book. That's just normal. But sort of like, well, I want to like it, but I'm having a hard time getting into it. And then other people saying from the first page, I was sucked in and I couldn't put it down.
I think a lot of it, and I could be wrong and I'm open to being wrong, but I think a lot of it is people see the thread and they make a snap judgment at that moment.
Oh, yeah.
And you even if they don't have a
psychological
thing. It's more like they didn't really have a strong opinion going in. And then they kind of read the reasons that the thread starter kind of put out there. And then they're like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, no, I felt that way. Yeah. I'm not saying your opinions
are
wrong or lies. I'm just saying.
Veronica's calling all of you liars and easily led sheep. No, that's not what she said.
It becomes decisive,
sort of primes the pump. Yeah,
a little bit.
But then what about Frederick and Ruth, because they weren't following, they were starting the thread?
I think that it's just different, you know, takes all kinds, different likes and dislikes. It's kind of, I mean, people either like a book or they don't like a book, or they kind of feel they don't have a feeling either way about it.
Sure.
And
I was thinking about the elements of this particular book. One of the things that I found difficult was learning this world. You always have to learn a world, right? One of the things I liked about James S.A. Corey's books is my personal experience that I brought to the book made it really easy to catch on. I just had to learn some character names, right? And I got everything else right away. Somebody else who hasn't read or seen the same sci-fi television shows as I have might have a different experience, right? Mm-hmm. So with Ancillary Justice, I felt like I had to do a little extra work to get up to speed on how this world works because of the AI situation.
Yes.
Because of the personal pronoun situation. But at the same time, I felt like it was worth it. And I felt like this is really interesting. And there's two main things going on to me. One is a very good story told in two different timelines and two different perspectives so that as I go from chapter to chapter, I'm like, oh, right, I'm going to find out what happens next in this part of the story. And I get really excited. But on top of that, there's the second track of playing with your gender conceptions because you have Breck saying she pretty much universally. Mm-hmm. And then one of the other characters will speak, as you were mentioning last time, and say he, and you're like, oh, now that character, I have a totally different view on that character. But why do I have a totally different view on that character? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. No,
it's really clever.
I definitely feel the same way. It's not an easy book to get into. Like, it's easy to get, I can see why people got sucked into it, because immediately my mind was working on so many different levels.
Yeah.
I feel like I was sucked into it on a very academic level immediately.
It works you a little bit, doesn't it?
It wasn't necessarily that I was sucked in on a story level, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wasn't like, wow, this story is incredibly gripping. It was more like, what is going on here? I don't understand. I need to read more and find out.
I think that's it, because universally, this was the one common element between the two threads. Most people seem to think that it really picks up around a third of the way through. Some people said 42%, some people said 30%. But everybody said like, oh yeah, yeah, it gets really good, or it finally picks up, depending on your perspective, at that point. So I think it has to do whether you found that challenge at the beginning to be fun, or if you found it to be a slog that, you know, like work that you had to do to start to enjoy it. But I think everybody is converging that they start to enjoy it at that point.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm really curious to see how everyone kind of comes together, and either will this be a successful book for the club, or will it be one of the tougher ones? I think it's going to be a successful pick. I mean, I know that's very subjective.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
But, you know, sometimes I can get a sense that, all right, this wasn't maybe everyone's favorite book. I'm not talking about Ancillary Justice. I just mean in general.
No, right. There's always going to be differing opinions, but sometimes you can tell which way the wind's blowing. That's all.
And I don't know about this one yet. It's kind of exciting to see how it's going to turn out, because it is a very thoughtful book. It's written in such a different way from so much of the other books we've read in the past. It's definitely very sci-fi in a wonderful kind of way. I love all the interplay between the different ancillaries. I love the AI factor. The way that the gender roles and the confusion and the world building that I'm still kind of unclear about. And so there's a lot of elements.
Yeah. And it's not even just the gender pronoun part. There's a lot of work you have to do as a reader to keep up. Mm-hmm. And part of it is, like you say, that perspective of an artificial intelligence that's in multiple places at once.
Well, I mean, it switches point of view mid-paragraph almost sometimes.
Right.
Like,
and what is brilliant about that is that would be natural for that kind of character to just be like, well, yeah, of course I can see over there 100 miles away and what's going on in the ship and in this other city over here. That's who I am. But it takes you a little work to catch up with that. I think it's worth it, because the reward is that you now get a better representation of what that would be like than it would be if it was all being spoon-fed to you. And then, because the AI could see in multiple places, that would get tedious to me, I think.
I can already kind of tell that this is going to be an award-winning book. I'm going to put this out there right now. I think, like, for the next award season, I can see this being a major contender, because it is so original in so many ways to me.
It's not just original though. It's also a great story and it's well executed. You know, it's like hitting on multiple
cylinders. And
it's the
first fracking novel.
I know.
Like, what the unbelievable. Like, just so unbelievable. Impressive. Like, it's really extremely impressive to me. And I think I kind of said that in the last episode too, because I had already started reading it at that point. But I'm pretty blown away. I'm not saying I'm a huge judge of what is good and what is not good, but I don't know. I mean, I think this is gonna be a major player.
No, it's gut feeling, and I have it too. I also would encourage folks who are struggling or maybe gave up a little early to. Normally, I'm like, you know what? If you don't like it, you don't like it, go away. I would encourage you to give it a second look. I do think it's worth the effort and worth the time.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, that's our book check-in for Ancillary Justice. As you can see, we're pretty riled up over it.
Now, if you want a book that's not very good and won't challenge you very much at all, check out TomMerrittBooks.com. You know, you don't have to buy any of the books. Just go look how pretty the site is, because you know what? I use Squarespace to make books.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
I wanted a place for the books, and I'm like, okay, I've got book covers. And the book cover for Lot Beta is brilliant because Scott Johnson did it. It's gorgeous. I'm like, the book cover is going to sell the book. Forget, you know, can't judge a book by its cover. Book covers are still online the thing that catches people's eye, and they know, oh, I'm looking at that book now. So I went to Squarespace because they make it easy. I just put the book cover up and some typology, and they do the design. They do these incredibly award-winning, beautiful designs. I just tweak a couple of things to, you know, make sure it doesn't look like every other site on the web, and it doesn't. And then I've got a great-looking site. Incredibly easy to use. You want any help with anything? 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, their support team is available, and it starts at just $8 a month, including a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And the other thing I like is the way it just automatically adjusts to my screen. So if I show somebody my site on my phone, it's not like, well, it looks a lot better on the... No, it looks like it was built for the phone. And again, I didn't do any work because I'm lazy. It just happens. So try it out. It's even commerce ready. If you're selling, if you're like, well, wait a minute, Tom, I'm a businessman. I sell things, not one of you print
I'm
on
Bob
demand.
I'm Bob Executive. Where's
That's
business?
Right. I want to sell my widgets, my crafts, my CDs, and my MP3s. They do it all at squarespace.com. So go start a trial. You don't even have to give them a credit card or anything. Start building your site. And when you decide to sign up, make sure to use this offer code, okay? SWORD10. SWORD has a W in it. You should know
SWORD.
That. It's SWORD10. Wait, no, it's SWORD11.
No, it's a new month. It's SWORD11.
SWORD11. Don't
sword
do 11. SWORD10.
We got to rewrite the ad.
SWORD11, but you still get 10% off, and you can show your support for Sword and Laser. We thank Squarespace for their support. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website.
Fantastic. And now it is time for Bear Your Sword, which is our feedback from the audience. Swing! So our first thread comes from Steven, who says, have you ever heard a song and it reminded you of a book? There are two songs on the radio that do that for me. Lord's song Royals reminds me of the book Invisible Monsters by Chuck Palahniuk, and the song Radioactive by Imagine Dragons reminds me of the book Wool. Both songs have lyrics and a musical style that just seem to fit. I was wondering if anyone else had this experience. Actually, Radioactive by Imagine Dragons also reminded me of Wool.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's about radioactiveness.
Sure. And I feel like there's definitely a song that always makes me think, and I, you know, immediately my mind goes to like, well, sure, the Annie Lennox song from the Lord of the Rings movie always makes me think of Lord of the Rings. But there he's talking about like the song didn't have anything to do with the book at any point or a movie or anything like that. And it still feels like it's a soundtrack for that book. Oh, there's one on the tip of my tongue and I can't remember it, or maybe it's somewhere in my brain. I don't know.
Somewhere in there. Somewhere in the depths.
I'm looking at my books, actually, like trying to see if it will trigger. Because there are definitely some songs where I'm like, oh, that should be in the soundtrack if that book is ever made.
Yeah, you know, I don't usually think along those lines, but I think it's cool that Steven brought this up. No one's responded yet on the thread because it's brand new.
Yeah, he just made it.
But I'm really interested to see what you guys out there think. Also, that Lorde album is amazing. L-O-R-D-E. She also did that song, Tennis Courts, I think that's the name of it. Mm-hmm. And her music videos are really interesting as well. So check that out.
Good stuff, Steven. I'll post a response if it comes to me what that song is, but I know there's one for sure.
So, Tom.
Yes.
Have Veronica. You seen Ender's Game yet?
No, I have not.
I have not either. But now
my
I
wife
might.
Is a big Thor fan, and
oh,
that
I
took
see that.
Priority.
I want to see that this weekend.
Yeah.
We're talking about this because a lot of you have discussed not wanting to see Ender's Game. Because you don't want to give money to Orson Scott Card, who, as we've discussed a lot on the show, has some very, what I consider to be out-of-date ideas about gay marriage, about, you know, gay people in general. Not very cool stuff, in my opinion. I don't usually go political on this show at all, but it does not align with my personal views. And so he's... a lot of people have that same issue, and there's been a lot of discussion around the film, controversy about that. Although today on the dissolve.com, there is a news article saying that Orson Scott Card isn't actually getting any money from the film. He's not benefiting from any of the profits or proceeds from the film itself. He basically has a decade-old deal that he's already been paid for the rights to the film, but he doesn't get anything on top of that. So
in other words, he got his money already for the film. And if you go see it and you buy a ticket, you would not be directly contributing any money to him. And so if that makes a difference to you, maybe. Some people who disagree with his beliefs may not want the film to do well because they don't want anything associated with his name.
Right. They don't want to support his brand in any kind of way.
Right.
Which I guess you would still be doing in a sense. I don't know. I feel like I need to see this movie as a reviewer of science fiction and fantasy material. But I also don't really want to support his cause either in any way. It's not supporting his cause, technically, but it is perhaps elevating his brand by talking about the film.
And I thought director Gavin Hood had a really good statement. He gave an interview to the Huffington Post, or at least that was posted on the Huffington Post. He said, "Frequently artists create something that is better and more insightful than their own particular point of view on some issue. We have a great piece of art, and we have the artist behind the art saying things that seem to be extremely bigoted, but they're not the book. The book is the book, and Orson's views are his views."
But the book is not the book. It is the work of a person.
Yeah. That's the Sinatra effect, right? A lot of people love the music of Frank Sinatra. A lot of you probably hate the music of Frank Sinatra, but those who love it, when they start to learn about the man, may have a less of an opinion about him. And there's all kinds of
artists. We could update that and call it the Chris Brown effect.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, no, that's a great modernization of that, where it's like, well, I still like the music, but don't like the guy very much. And so that's going on here for a lot of people. And it's tough, especially when you're talking about a book that every copy that sells, if you want to encourage people to read the book or buy the book, is going to benefit the author. I am torn on this sort of thing because I agree with the director a bit that, hey, you know what? A great work of art can come from any kind of source and we should still respect the art. I 100% believe that. But I am also a believer in expressing your opinion with your feet. And so it gets tricky if you don't agree with something that is made by somebody, or you don't agree with something that someone says or believes, and yet you love the thing they made.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'll just pirate the movie and watch the privacy of my own home.
Maybe I'll just become a scofflaw.
Yeah. I want to know what you guys think out there. If this changes your opinion, maybe I'll even put up a straw poll on the,
yeah, that's
on
a good
the
idea.
Twitter account. If this changes your opinion about the movie, let us know. Either head over to Sword and Laser, head over to twitter.com/swordandlaser or email us at feedback@swordandlaser and we'll read your responses on the show.
Well, that does it for us. Sure does. Did we raise? We're at $41,218.
Oh, so only $9,000 to go.
Yeah. Do it.
That's a lot of blow.
Honestly.
That's a lot of drugs.
We're really happy with where we are. But it would be fun to do the live audience thing. So
it really would be. I can't wait to start shooting the second season.
And the Talking Dragon thing.
Oh,
good. I am so excited about the second season as well. I can't wait to get started on it. It's going to be so fun.
It is. But if you want to get in touch with us, as I mentioned, the email address is feedback@swordandlaser.com. Our website is swordandlaser.com. All of our discussions happen over on goodreads.com. And if you want to call and leave us a voicemail, hit us up at 415-7-SWORD-6. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.